The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Welcome back to the October 2023 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is the annual mountain issue, Autumn in the Smokies, and what better way to start than an article entitled, The Great Smokies. There's a lovely picture here, two-page spread behind the title. Everything is very purple haze-ish, except the sky, which is, I'm not sure what color to call it. It's a little bit of rose and tan and off-white. It's the, you know, kind of a sunset and really hazy out that's showing those colors. But the mountains themselves are definitely purple. And as usual, as in the Smokies, there are some very low-lying clouds right down in the valley. The caption for the picture says, "The hazy early morning view from Sunrise Point at Snowbird Mountain Lodge in Robbinsville is a gentle summons to sit still and marvel at nature's nobility. A wonderland of wilderness spread among majestic misty mountains. Land rich with ancient folk traditions, teeming with wildlife. The Great Smoky Mountains are North Carolina's sanctuary." And underneath it says, "Nature, trout, mountain chapels, arts, and culture." So that's really an introductory page to a series of articles, the first of which is The Great Smokies, Nature. In these vast landscapes, monuments of awe can be found not only in the layers of massive mountain ranges, but also in the wildlife that hides in the woods and at our very feet. There is a watercolor drawing here of a bearded hiker, middle age, big pack on his back. He's using a walking stick. He's standing on a little outcrop of rock, and he's overlooking some green pasture land with mountains and their inevitable clouds in the distance. The smaller side of the Smokies. It may seem counterintuitive in this land of sweeping views and soaring peaks, but to fully appreciate the wonder and diversity of the Great Smoky Mountains, follow the advice of three naturalists who have returned to the area again and again. Look down. Written by Karen Langley Martin. And there's a picture of perhaps the author or some other woman taking notes in a book. Actually, she's drawing things that she's seen on the ground. They all look like bugs. And the right-hand page, there is a beautiful close-up picture of a butterfly with huge orange wings with black and white spots. And the caption says, "Of the 60,000 to 80,000 species that call the Great Smoky Mountains home, including Gulf Fritillary," that's fritillary, rather, F-R-I-T-I-L-L-A-R-Y, Gulf Fritillary butterflies, that feed on red clover blossoms, oyster mushrooms, as shown in the opposite page, and elderberries. More than 20,000 have been identified, leaving up to 75% waiting to be discovered. The hikers round a bend in the trail and gasp. Just there, in the shade of a spruce tree, dances a cluster of tiny fairies. There are six of them, each one a bobbing white globe no bigger than a housefly. Kim Heng, the hiker's guide for the morning, delights in the discovery. Balloon flies, she announces, or dance flies. She tells the hikers a story almost as enchanting as if the flies really were fairies. The male dance fly captures an insect, wraps it in silk, and bobs up and down with it to attract the attention of the females. When two males vie for the same female, you can see their silk globes dancing up and down, fast and furious. Sometimes a male shows off with an empty sack, tricking his future mate, who is surely disappointed when she discovers that the lovely silk package is lacking. Heng continues up the trail, and the hikers linger and marvel at the fairy flies, trying in vain to capture the magic on their cell phones. Here in the Great Smoky Mountains, your eyes are constantly drawn up to towering tulip poplars, rushing waterfalls, unending layers of peaks. But Heng knows a secret, one that has lured scientists and researchers from around the country to the sprawling area on the border between North Carolina and Tennessee. Against the backdrop of a forest floor, an equally compelling drama unfolds in miniature. So don't forget to also look down and appreciate the world at your feet, the lichens, mosses, insects, mushrooms, and salamanders, maybe even dance flies. Born in Connecticut, to nature-loving parents, I was indoctrinated when I was small, Heng says. By age four, she was already bringing home plants that she thought had special properties to study. Around fourth grade, she found a book in her parents' library, A Girl of the Limberlost by Jean Stratton Porter. The heroine, an impoverished young girl growing up on the edge of a swamp, discovers that she can pay for college by capturing moths and selling them to collectors. I want to do that, Heng thought. She got her B.S. in entomology from Arizona State University, then went to grad school at The Ohio State University to study medical entomology. She wanted to specialize in mosquito-borne diseases, but after a year, she withdrew from the program. I realized research is not what I was interested in, she says. I wanted to work with people. These days, Heng lives in western North Carolina on 36 acres that she and her botanist husband, Jim Kreiner, have turned into a United Plant Savers sanctuary. She hosts talks, leads hikes, and shares her love and knowledge of nature, especially in her favorite place on Earth, the Joyce Kilmer Slick Rock Wilderness, 17,000 acres adjacent to Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Heng's hikes are not about sweeping views or summits. Her pace is sporadic. One minute she's charging up the trail at a fast clip, then abruptly she stops and pokes her walking stick into a patch of jade-green plants. Jewelweed, a preventative for poison ivy, she says. You crush the leaves and rub the juice from the stem on the area you think was exposed to poison ivy. when one of the hikers has a question. Hang stops and turns with an eager smile, as if she'd just been waiting for someone to ask. She addresses the whole group, not just the question asker. It's never a quick answer. A question for Hang is an opportunity to share the wonder of nature. "Do elderberries grow here?" someone asks. "They do," Hang says. "The good kind and the bad kind." Her eyes twinkle behind lavender wire-rimmed glasses. She knows that someone will ask the obvious follow-up question. "Good elderberries are the ones with white blooms. Those are the ones most people know about for antiviral properties," she explains. "The bad ones are the red-flowered elderberries, which bloom earlier. Those," she says, "will make you quite sick." Hang knows far more than the average person about the nutritional and medicinal properties of native plants. In the spring, she makes tea from sassafras, following the tradition of early settlers whose bodies craved vitamin C after a long winter. She teaches people how to forage for oyster mushrooms and morels. She uses an array of plants and herbs to help combat her seasonal allergies, and yet, she admits without shame, "I'm the first one in line at Walgreens when my allergies get bad." Someone asks her opinion on herbal supplements like elderberry tinctures or turmeric tablets. "You really need to know what you're buying and who you're buying it from," Hang says. "And you need to be skeptical. It's good to be skeptical. It keeps you alive." James Lendermer steps gingerly along an outcrop of rocks. The slipper of fallout here could be disastrous. He is deep in the Smokies, many miles from help. His expert eyes scan the rocks. There, three-dimensional, greenish-yellow fingers dangle off a ledge. Hardly able to believe his luck, Lendermer snaps a photo, jots some notes, and carefully packs the specimen. Then he starts back the way he came, hand-carrying his discovery 14 miles down a rugged section of the Appalachian Trail. Lendermer has seen more lichen than just about anyone, which is how he knows that the green fingers he found are something new, never described or documented before. He's on the faculty of the City University of New York, and he oversees the curation of the lichen collection at the New York Botanical Garden, the largest such collection in the Western Hemisphere. Lendermer travels a lot and receives specimens from all over the world, but he returns at least twice a year to one of his favorite places, Great Smoky Mountains National Park. "Anyone who's been to the Smokies knows this is a really special place," Lendermer says. "The Appalachian Mountains are a hot spot for lichens. They've never been glaciated here, so they've been around a very long time. You have these really high mountains and low elevations and a core area of relatively undisturbed old-growth forest. It's an amazing place where you see species that don't grow anywhere else and things that are rare in other places but common here." Lendermer dreams of a day when lichens are known the way that birds and other species are. For those fortunate enough to have the chance to hike in the Great Smokies, he encourages a slow pace. "When you're hiking, it's easy to be focused on the goal of getting to the next peak," he says. "But if you can stop for a second and just take in the existence of this amazing, colorful, dynamic mosaic of things growing on rocks and trees, you have to stop and notice, or you'll never see it." On an average day hike in the Smokies, you'll spot hundreds of species of lichen. Not that most of us would recognize the tremendous diversity that we're seeing. Still, simply slowing down and paying attention can bring some of it into focus. Focus on something you find intriguing, for whatever reason, Lindemer says. Just take 10 or 20 seconds and look closely. Appreciate what it's doing, what it's growing with. Why does it look interesting to you? Are there insects interacting with it? Are there other plants interacting? That's the entry level into the rabbit hole. What's this? The boy's yelp shatters the silence at a back county campsite on Fantana Lake. Aaron Cantor rushes over to a group of teenagers huddled around the yelper. He had a massive spider on his shoulder, she says. So we took a picture and put it on iNaturalist, which filters into the ATBI. The ATBI, All Taxa Biodiversity Inventory, is an effort to identify every species living in Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Each summer, Cantor leads a group of teenagers on a backcountry canoe trip on Fontana Lake and into the Smokies. The camp partners with researchers seeking data from hard-to-reach areas, allowing them to do real field research in the backcountry with kids. This year, they'll photograph and document interesting species to add to the ever-growing catalog. Well over 20,000 species now. The trip is part fun and part research, which, according to Cantor, is how all science should be. I didn't get into science because of science, she says. I fell in love with it because I played outside and got curious. Cantor is manager of science literacy and research at the Great Smoky Mountains Institute at Tremont in Tennessee. And on her canoe trips, curiosity is king. We bring field guides and goggles, she says. Where the kids show curiosity, we follow it. The teens arrive on a Monday evening to pack their bags and get acquainted before an early morning departure. One girl came with experience in paddling and canoeing, Cantor says. One girl didn't even know it was a canoe trip until she was dropped off. Cantor welcomes them all, shows them how to use a water purifier, guides them through backcountry trails, indulges their absurd jokes, and yells at them through her tent wall to go to sleep when she still hears giggling at 11 p.m. Above all, she wants them to fall in love with nature and science. Early in her career, Cantor spent time working in a microbiology lab. That experience, she says, was everything I don't want kids to think science is. Rather, she wants them to experience discovery like she did as a child, collecting feathers to compare under a microscope. The kids learn that the spider on the boy's foot, for example, is a Dolomitis tenebrosus, a dark fishing spider. I love focusing on small things, Cantor says. You look outside and see a wall of green. But there's so much going on. Look at butterflies. They're those pretty little things. People have tattoos of them. But if you take this tiny creature and look closely, you'll see that they have the most interesting behaviors, brilliant color patterns, and incredible migrations that span multiple generations. It's easy to get disconnected from nature, even though we are part of nature, and I don't think we can be reconnected until we pay attention. She thinks of how the naturalist John Muir Laws defines love as sustained, compassionate attention. When we see the butterfly as an individual, she says, we can care, act, and vote for it. We protect things we love. And now, bear with us, B-E-A-R, as in the black bear, A couple shares their experience with Smoky Mountain black bears so others will know how to react if they have a close encounter of the ursine kind. Written by Rebecca Woltz. Exhausted and soaking with sweat, husband and wife backcountry guides Joel and Kathy Zachary had just crested a bald on the Appalachian Trail. The two of them were catching their breath when, just ahead, a black bear stood up in a blueberry patch and looked right at them. The pair froze. The bear was only 30 yards away, much closer than the recommended 50-yard distance that they knew they should keep from wildlife. Suddenly the bear charged, and the Zacharys, who knew exactly what to do, stand your ground, make noise, did the opposite. They turned and ran down the trail in sheer panic. Loaded down with backpacking gear, they ran for what seemed like miles. In retrospect, they realized that it was probably only a short distance before they looked back and saw that the bear had given up the chase and loped down the mountain toward Fontana Dam. They were lucky to have escaped harm. That's the very textbook description of what not to do when you encounter a bear, Joel says. The Zacharys ought to know. They've since written a book on bears. Literally, Joel penned Bears We've Met, Short Stories of Close Encounters, published in 2010. But he credits Kathy as his best editor. The book includes anecdotes of their experiences with bears in remote areas across North America. Several of the stories, like the Bear in the Berry Patch, their first close encounter, took place in Great Smoky Mountains National Park, the one that they visited most often. They also lead hikes and teach about nature through their outdoor travel company, Great Outdoors Adventure Travel, or GOAT. Their GOAT engagements include leading day hikes and giving nature presentations on topics like black bears in the Smokies at both Snowbird Mountain Lodge in Robbinsville and the Swag Resort near Waynesville, where they serve as experts in residence. There are an estimated 19,000 black bears in Great Smoky Mountains National Park, up from historical estimates of 1,600. That's about 2 bears per square mile. They are opportunistic carnivores, Joel says, meaning that their diet, composed of about 83% vegetation, consists of a variety of foods, grasses and leaves, nuts and berries, insects and small animals. In the fall, they eat as much as possible to put on weight before retiring to den sites for torpor, which Joel defines as an easily aroused sleep. Contrary to popular belief, bears don't truly hibernate. While body processes slow down during torpor, the decrease is not as dramatic as that of hibernation. During torpor, they like to wedge themselves into the hollows of dead trees high in the air. Black bears are excellent climbers and spend a lot of time in trees throughout the year, often retreating upward when they hear or smell hikers in the park. Joel and Kathy each developed a love for the outdoors while growing up on farms in eastern Tennessee, just a few miles from each other. Joel's childhood home was minutes from the Tennessee River, and he spent a lot of time there, fishing and camping. Kathy helped care for the animals on her farm, the border collies that her dad raised, and the sheep and geese that he used to train the dogs to herd. While their families knew each other, Joel and Kathy were too far apart in age, 12 years, to have grown up together. Joel went on to study education at Tennessee Technological University and later earned a master's degree in biology from Middle Tennessee State University. Kathy got both her bachelor's and master's degrees in biomedical engineering from the University of Tennessee. Both got experience teaching while in graduate school. Joel then taught field biology courses at the community college level, leading backpacking trips on the Appalachian Trail. Kathy did her first backpacking trip, 120 miles, while taking Joel's course over the summer. During the trip, they began to get to know one another. The two bonded over their shared affinity for the outdoors and later started dating. Joel describes their relationship as a love story founded in adventure. In the early 1980s, the two started teaching non-credit classes with the Smoky Mountain Field School, a collaborative effort between the University of Tennessee and the National Park Service that aims to teach students about the flora and fauna of Great Smoky Mountains National Park. The couple later served as directors of the program and are now its longest-running instructors. After they were married in 1987, the Zacharys took a trip to Alaska and started leading group trips there. They began learning about bears for safety reasons. They're amazing animals, Joel says. They're not to be feared. They're to be respected and given the space that they require. Otherwise, they'll put you out of their space. Joel's work in Alaska continued when he became involved with a Montana-based Great Bear Foundation in the mid-1990s. Through that organization, which seeks to educate people about the importance of bears and how to live cooperatively with them, he spent parts of two summers on Kodiak Island south of Anchorage. There he observed bears and helped develop ecotourism programs in a small village. Later he served as the organizer's president and as a board member. Joel held the same two roles for Appalachian Bear Rescue, which cares for orphaned and injured black bear cubs while keeping them insulated from human contact to prevent attachment and desensitization to people. When the bears are old enough to, and also well enough, they are released into suitable habitats near where they were found, like Great Smoky Mountains National Park, where hikers like Joel and Kathy might be fortunate enough to catch a glimpse of them. "I go in search of them," Joel says. He enjoys knowing that the bears are aware of our presence, and he feels that humans have the opportunity to coexist with them. They are the symbols of wilderness, he says. While the Zacharys were leading a week-long backpacking trip on the Appalachian Trail and camping near Spencefield in the late 1980s, a mother bear and her two small cubs appeared and circled the three-sided camping shelter. As Joel, Kathy, and the other hikers watched, the mother reclined against a tree at the edge of the woods, and her cubs crawled under her belly and started to nurse. They purred like kittens, Kathy says. It was the neatest thing to watch. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions, comments, call us, studios, please, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.